Meeting will come to order. We do have a quorum. Give folks a second to sit down here. Okay. Has anyone had a chance to look at the minutes?
I did.
Representative Winkler, would you like to move the minutes?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move approval of the minutes of February 16th.
Okay, Representative Winkler moves the approval of the minutes of February 16th. Have any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. The minutes of February 16th are approved. We will go ahead and get going with House File 281 when Representative Carlson can come up.
Madam Chair.
Morning. Representative Nelson.
I'll move Representative Carlson's bill to be moved, passed, and moved to the General Register.
Okay, Representative Nelson moves that House File 281 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the General Register. Please proceed.
And Madam Chair, I do have a strike everything amendment that perhaps you could, I'm not a member of the committee, have somebody move that, and then that's the way I would like to present the bill.
Madam Chair, I'll move the DE3 amendment. Is that the right one? Yeah, that's the right one.
Representative Nelson moves the DE3 amendment. It looks like a delete everything, so I think maybe we could just pass this and then proceed from there, if that would be okay. Any discussion? All those in favor of the DE3 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment does prevail. To your bill.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, I'll give a quick overview of the bill, and then there will be testimony by Beth Fraser with the Secretary of State's office, and I understand that perhaps the League of Cities and the counties may want to comment as well. This bill gives county, municipal, and school district canvassing boards more flexibility as to when they can hold canvassing board meetings for the primary election. Prior to the legislative changes made last year, local canvassing boards could meet on the Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday after the primary. This was changed last year because we allowed local elected officials to take some time after the close of the polls to process the absentee ballots to ensure that no one voted both in person and with an absentee ballot. In the original bill, the local elected officials had 48 hours to complete this task, and so it was important to ensure that none of the canvassing occurred until Friday, when we could ensure this was done. Ultimately, this time was shortened to 24 hours after the polls closed, but the window for canvassing the returns was not changed from the original proposal. Many cities in particular found it challenging to be required to hold their canvassing board meeting on a Friday in August and would like more flexibility. And that's really the key in this whole bill, is to provide then more flexibility for the canvassing. This is important because some of the statistics that are canvassed, including the number of voters who signed the register for the roster and the number of election day registrants and the number of absentee ballots in a precinct, should be the same regardless of whether you are looking at the state, county, city, or school district level results. These numbers are entered into the results system by the county, and the amendment will allow the counties to plan their work and know which precincts statistics they need to enter for proof. And I was originally contacted by the city of Robbinsdale on this issue, but since learned that there was a lot of interest across the state and all levels of government after I started to do some work on the issue. So it would be all right, Madam Chair, if Ms. Fraser could comment then as well.
Welcome back to the committee, Ms. Fraser.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Beth Fraser with the Office of the Secretary of State. And I'm primarily here to answer questions about this. We are supportive of giving local election officials and canvassing boards more flexibility and have been working on this language with counties, cities, and school boards, and have heard from many of them that they believe that this amendment will work well for them and will help them plan their work. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Does anyone have any question for the testifiers? Representative Quam.
Madam Chair, I'm a little bit confused in that in my home district in this past election, they opened up the absentee ballots the Friday before the election, and they actually did that before the announced time, and there was a hassle to people that wished to try and observe. They were verbally abused for their audacity in being there, and I just have concerns of, you know, this bill doesn't address to where you're opening up absentee ballots before the election, and therefore when you're canvassing to see if they voted and absentee voted, they already have two ballots that are in the count. I would have enjoyed having this take care of that issue, because it disenfranchises my vote if you already have more votes in there than people that signed the rolls.
Ms. Frazier?
Madam Chair, Representative, the system actually works a little bit differently than you described it. And one of the changes that was made last year was that voters have the option of voting by absentee ballot. And if they change their minds, they're allowed to go in again or notify the county or city up until 5 p.m. Friday, before the election. After that point, once you have cast an absentee ballot and it's been accepted, it is marked on the roster AB. And so if you go in to vote, the election judges will turn you away. They will say, oh, I'm sorry, it appears that you've already voted by absentee ballot and that ballot has been counted. You may not vote today. The reason, which then allows election officials to spend after 5 p.m. on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, opening and feeding the absentee ballots into the ballot counter or the ballot box. The trick is, after the rosters are marked, you need to be sure that any ballots that come in, for example, in the mail on Monday, that the person doesn't also show up in the polling place. And so local election officials work with the election judges to ensure that before that absentee ballot is opened and counted, that the roster is marked. So in some cases, they might call the election judges or call the city clerk and say, mark the roster. Or they might wait until the rosters come back and then go through and be sure there's no signature there. If there is, then they'll reject the absentee ballot. So procedures were put in place last year to prevent somebody from having both an absentee ballot and an in-person ballot counted. And so the canvassing of the results is a separate issue, but I hope that explains some of how the system works.
Follow up, Madam Chair?
Representative Quam.
Madam Chair, thank you. But it doesn't take care of the issue of people being vouched when they get their absentee ballots, because I have witnesses of that, for someone vouched for a dozen people, and then someone comes in to vote and they're the person and they're being denied a vote because someone that didn't present an ID and was vouched already voted absentee before. I mean, where is the recourse if I come in and it's marked that I voted absentee and I didn't?
Ms. Frazier?
Madam Chair and Representative Quam, if you come in and the roster is marked that you voted by absentee ballot, the election, and you insist that no, you did not vote by absentee ballot, the election judges at that point should call the county or city, whoever processed the absentee ballots, to find out exactly what's going on. But the absentee ballot procedure involves having an individual fill out an application with quite a bit of information, including an identification number and a signature. and then filling out the absentee ballot certificate, which is printed on the envelope, which also includes much of that information, including an identification number and signature. And when the ballots are processed and accepted and rejected, they are looking at that information and making sure the name and address and identification numbers match up. And if the identification numbers don't match up, looking at the signatures to see if they match. And so there will have already been a process to see, you know, that the ballot is legitimate.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So are you then saying that the training for the election people that accepted vouching as opposed to a form of ID for an absentee ballot were mistrained or it was left out of the material, such as they neglected, your office neglected to have in the materials that they look at the ID and see if there's a visa status, and, you know, so was it a negligence upon the documentation from the Secretary of State, or were the people inaccurately allowing these absentee ballots without appropriate information ID?
Ms. Frazier.
Madam Chair, Representative Quam, you're asking a few different questions, and I'll try to answer them quickly. People who are not currently registered at their current address and who want to vote absentee are allowed to, are sent an absentee ballot with a certificate that requires, that allows them basically to do Election Day registration. They are in that case required to, in addition to showing their witness their ballot to show that it was blank, and are also required to show their witness proof of residence. And one of the allowed proofs of residence is vouching. So if the witness or somebody else that's there personally knows that the individual lives in the precinct, they are allowed to swear under oath that that is the case. So proof of residence is slightly different than the identification number on the ballot, which was a new feature that was added last legislative session. The identification number on the ballot can either be a driver's license number, a state ID card number, the last four digits of your Social Security number, unless you don't have any of those numbers. But so, for example, if I have recently moved, I may have a driver's license and can put that driver's license number on the application and on the envelope. But it could not serve as my proof of residence because it has my old address on it. And so it could be used for one of the purposes, but not if I wasn't currently registered as my proof of residence. And so if I didn't have a utility bill or something, I could have, if my witness is a neighbor or somebody else who's registered in the precinct, have that person vouch that they personally know that I live in that precinct, and they're swearing as such under oath.
Madam Chair, this is at the county seat. This is voting before the election, going in and voting at the county seat, and they're being vouched, and then somebody, so their vote's cast, and somebody comes in to vote. What is my recourse if somebody who had no, you know, I mean, to me, I think your system needs more protection, especially when you're counting and intermingling the ballots beforehand. And I think maybe I need to offline have a discussion with somebody from your group to better understand this hole in the process.
Representative Quam, I think that's fine. I think we're kind of getting a little bit beyond the scope of the bill, and I've been pretty allowed some leeway here, but I think we're kind of getting into an area now where perhaps this would be a longer discussion elsewhere. Maybe a quick response, and then we can take that offline somewhere.
Well, Madam Chair, I was just going to point out that this bill is crafted rather narrowly in terms of when the canvassing board meets, and a number of issues have been surfaced here, but I think that might be for later legislation or another meeting if the chair were to desire to do that.
I agree. Does the League of Cities or Counties need to come and testify on this, or anybody that wants to come and testify?
Apparently, Apparently,
no. Okay, no.
I was told that they might be available, and apparently, they're present but need not testify.
Okay,
Madam Chair, the emails I've received have stated that they are in support of the bill, and so if you want to hear that, I'm sure they're happy to come up and say that.
Oh, okay. Apparently, there is a member of the public that wanted to testify, Elizabeth Sletton. If you could, Ms. Sletton, if you could keep it to, you know, two and a half minutes, that would be great.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I am Elizabeth Sletton, and as you know, I've sent you emails, each individual committee member, on a couple occasions regarding several issues due with different election issues of great substantial importance that this committee needs to see. However, sticking to the topic today, as Beth Frazier from the Secretary of State's office stated that they kind of utilized a trick with their balloting process, alluding to some of the information that has been expressed here today, and talking specifically about ballot and absentee ballots, the barcode. Some people might allude to there is a tracking mechanism on those absentee ballots. Absentee ballots that I saw from individuals that received them in the mail from specific city of Maplewood, they did not have those tracking mechanisms on their ballots. Therefore, anyone that alludes to the tracking mechanisms being tracked in the Secretary of State's office, I would highly disagree with. There was no tracking mechanism on them. The implementation of that mechanism is very important for that barcode to ensure that every vote is counted. Our military personnel and other persons that are not able to go to the polling place to place their vote have every right, as any other individual in this room, to have their vote counted. So I take great, very stern, if you will, please respectfully, offense to not having those individuals vote count. Today, when looking at this bill, one thing I do also feel very firmly on is giving too much time for the canvassing process. I think part of issues that have arose in people's specific areas that they've looked into many of years is that canvassing time, there's too much open window that people are able to manipulate votes, and that has happened, and people have proof of that happening. So I think that window needs to be closed to leave for less of a chance for additional fraud to be manipulated, or votes, if you will, to be manipulated with, excuse me, any absentee or any other ballot for that matter, especially as everybody's aware of specifically the city of Maplewood having many issues. And with that, I'll yield my rest of my comments for another time as they are not appropriate for this specific meeting. And if you have any questions, of course, I'm always available. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, does anybody have any questions for either the testifier, Ms. Frazier, Representative Carlson, on this bill? Okay, well, hearing no further discussion, Representative Nelson.
Madam Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 281 be, as amended, be passed and moved to the General Register.
Okay, Representative Nelson renews his motion that 281 be recommended to pass as amended and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion does prevail, and it will be on
Thank
the General
Madam
Register.
Chair,
Thank you.
Committee.
Next, we will be taking up, once again, House File 52, and I will have Representative Murray take over.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the next bill before us is House File 52. Representative Pepin, would you like to move your bill to get it before this committee?
I would. I would like to move House File 52, that it be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register.
Okay, Representative Pepin moves her bill. I understand also we have an amendment, Amendment H0052A1. Whose amendment, or who is offering this amendment? Representative Beard, do you move your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A1 amendment and speak to it in a moment.
Does everyone have a copy of the amendment?
Representative Murray?
Yes.
Perhaps I could just refresh what the bill is before we went into the amendment.
Sure.
Briefly.
Thank you.
I just wanted to remind everybody that this is the House Bill 52 has to do with a court ruling in the Krummetmacher case. Which made it impossible for municipalities to approve variances. And we had heard this in more of an informational hearing a couple weeks ago, probably the beginning of January. And the result was that it put the cities and land use applicants in a position where variances can only be approved when there is no other reasonable use of the applicant's land. And I'm sure there are a few people here that could testify as to why this is needed if more information is needed. But I just want to kind of update everybody where we're at, and then perhaps this would be an appropriate time then for Representative Beard to talk about his amendment.
Okay, Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll make a few comments, members, in support of the amendment, recognizing that there probably are members of the public who would like to testify both for and against the amendment, Mr. Chairman, and I would encourage that debate. This amendment deletes part of the bill that attempts to change or expand, in my opinion, the authorities of cities or counties to impose conditions rather than just issue the variances. I would contend, members, that this was not exactly the issue in the original Krummetmacher case. And the bill that we actually ended up getting in House File 52, I think, went a little beyond what the understanding was between the parties who actually negotiated and assembled and drafted legislation that had, in the words of Chairman Davids, peace in the valley. But the bill we actually ended up getting before us, in my opinion, expanded that authority just a little bit. There also was quite a good faith effort on behalf of many folks who I think are both for and against the amendment as you see it in front of you, to actually try to reach an understanding that would give cities variances and line up the language between the different chapters in the statutes between townships, counties, and cities. And I think that's a noble effort that we should move forward with. However, this morning I'm choosing not to include language that was attempted that tried to do that in this amendment. I think that's a bit of a reach for an immediate issue that we need to do, which is to adapt House File 52 so that it meets the immediate need to allow cities to grant variances again. I think this is important, members, because not only was I on a city council once where we found it very difficult to get things past our city attorney, this year pre-Krummetmacher days even, but I also testified on behalf of my next-door neighbor who asked for a reasonable and tepid, very tepid variance concerning an issue on his lot, and the City Council and the Board of Variance and Appeals, or the Board of Appeals, threw up their hands and said, "Our hands are tied. We just can't issue you a variance," and denied him that kind of a thing. So I think this will actually address the immediate problem, allow the cities to get on with the business of granting variances that are reasonable. And if we want to align county, township, and city interests, that's something we should take up either between here and the Senate or between here and next year and make that a separate piece of legislation. So I would stand for questions and urge your adoption of the A1 amendment.
Okay, thank you, Representative Beard. Is there any further discussion on the amendment? Yes. Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I think I overheard Mr. Koch comment that there would be people who want to testify, so I guess
that is correct.
My question was, you know, who's for and who's against this amendment, but I guess we'll hear in a minute.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Are there members in the audience, are there people in the audience that would like to speak for or against this amendment? And I believe we have Kent Sullen with the Association of Townships, and Craig Johnson with the League of Cities. If you would like to state your name, please, and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Kent Sulem, General Counsel with the Minnesota Association of Townships, and I am here to speak against the A1 amendment. I do appreciate Representative Beard's efforts to work with us trying to find some resolution to the disagreement that arose after we thought we had consensus on the bill. The problem that we have, if this amendment goes on, and I understand that the intent of it is to return us to status quo language regarding the ability to apply conditions, the concern is that what happens is that you'll have two different standards between the counties and the cities, and the townships get trapped in the middle because we have a very unique situation. Our authority to do zoning and therefore our authority to do variances is found in Chapter 462. However, there's a provision in 394, the county statutes, that require us to be equal to or more restrictive than the county provisions. So if we do not have uniformity, and because of the legislative history that is now on the record saying, as Representative Beard stated, that while we thought this bill was by clarifying and creating uniformity, we're extending current law, we're going beyond current law, so we're retrenching that. That legislative history can be used against us in the lawsuit saying, well, wait a minute, township, you're trying to impose conditions because you think under case law we've had that authority. But the legislature specifically looked at the issue and said, no, we're not going there. You can't impose conditions. But the counties, yes, you can. And so now we're caught. If we impose conditions, we're sued for trying to do so. If we don't impose conditions, we could be challenged by the county for not being as restrictive. So it's putting us, because of not having uniformity and the legislative history that's on the record now of what is the intended scope of the conditions, we're becoming very, very vulnerable to being sued. And so we like the bill as introduced. We had many amendments that were offered to the other side to try to codify verbatim language from the statute, and I believe Mr. Johnson may address that in more detail. That would have clarified this very well. Unfortunately, the response I received talking to a couple of the representatives was simply, no, we don't have to go therefore we won't. And it's hard to negotiate with that. So with that, I'll stand for questions, but we do need to oppose the amendment.
Okay, is there any questions from the members for Mr. Sulem? Seeing none, Mr. Johnson, would you like to proceed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Craig Johnson. I'm representing the League of Minnesota Cities. And very much want to thank Representative Pepin, Representative Beard, and the staff of the committee who've spent the last very, very confusing month working with us on this once-upon-a-time consensus bill. It has been a strange trip. It was a month ago that we came in here and walked this committee through this bill, explained the bill with the chair. Since that time, and at that time it was raised that there were some concerns, or at least some heartburn, I believe was the phrase, about potential impacts of language people wanted to look at and work with us to address. Over that time period, we have made four language offers. I'm going to run through what each of those was so you know. We got no response on any of those, and we have still not met with the group that testified in this committee that they had concerns about the language. The concerns are addressed in the amendment. It's the language on page 2, lines 6, 7, and 8, and on page 3, lines 11 and 12. The two phrases that are being questioned are the adding of requiring mitigation. Excuse me, I get the right language in front. And mitigating requirements, and to protect public health, safety, and the environment. All of the offers we made removed both of those phrases and replaced them with other language that we found in other places. So let me give a little bit of background. We first of all thought that this was an unfounded concern. We understood they hadn't seen the language before, so we were willing to talk about that. But variances, by definition, are an exception to an ordinance. It's someone asking to do something that would otherwise be illegal because of local ordinances. And those ordinances are adapted under the police powers of local governments to protect public health, safety, and welfare. So, with that said, we found it a little unusual that asking for a variance from an ordinance that was designed to protect public health, safety, and welfare cannot consider public health, safety, and welfare. The first offer was simply to replace the language public health, safety, and the environment with public health, safety, and welfare, since that's repeated in both county and city statutes in several places, and to remove the phrase and mitigating requirements. The second offer was to actually just leave the language that this amendment leaves, the public interest, which is found in the county statutes in Section 1, 394, to just take those same three words and place them in the city section, 462, so that it was the same language in both sections. That was not acceptable. We then redrafted the bill from scratch and used language from the existing law to say that essentially if it is furthering the purpose of the zoning ordinance underlying the need for the variance, that's when you can oppose conditions. That was not acceptable. And then finally, our fourth offer was to actually take language from a court ruling in the city of Maplewood and say that conditions can be imposed that are reasonably related to the impact of the proposed variance for any of the following purposes: to ensure compliance, protect adjacent properties, and promote public health, safety, and welfare. It was cited in a court case as when it's appropriate for a city to give a variance. That was not acceptable. We don't know what else to say, except that we really do need clarity in this. The courts have made it clear, and in the Krumenacher case, there's several places where they point out that one of the factors they had to take into account as they looked at this decision was the difference between the county statute and the city statute. Counties had two definitions that they were allowed to look at for a variance. Cities had one. So they determined that since the statute was different in each case, they had, among other reasons, no option but to read the language specifically, clearly, that cities do not have the second option. That's why we're sitting in front of you today with cities almost impossibly put in a position on variances. The only way you can get a variance right now is if there is no reasonable use for your property without that variance. So, from the very beginning when we started working on this, this bill has been to do two things: to specifically counter the concerns the Supreme Court raised and the language that they said did not work in the Krumenacher decision, and to make sure that we didn't leave ourselves exposed to similar differences that are just asking for the next court ruling to say the language is still different. So we worked throughout this to make the language as identical as possible, given that they're in two different sections of law. So some of the terms do have to remain different regardless of what we try to do. The Krumenacher case really set us up with the situation of if we want to avoid having our variance authority again impeded, we should be fixing the whole thing. We should be doing a good public policy change, not just a Band-Aid because of one court ruling, which is why we asked in the original bill for the language to be made the same in those lines. This amendment fails to do that, and frankly, we cannot support the amendment, and we could not support legislation that doesn't address this problem. Variance needs to be a very clear understanding involved with a variance that it is the authority to do something outside of what is normally allowed. And it is being done under the Protect Public Health, Safety, and Welfare Authority of local government. Clarity in our statutes is good. We want to avoid confusion for the public, for the people who have to practice under those rules in local government, and for the courts when they have to evaluate how to interpret and apply the law that you have all passed. And the only reason that you would leave the language different is if there is someone who wants to argue that there is, in fact, a difference between the public interest that counties should address and what cities should address when they look at a variance. None of us on the local government side have had an issue with this. The argument would be made that there hasn't been a problem with this in the past, that we've had 20 years where the language has been different and the courts have been okay with that. I would point out respectfully that for 20 years, we also had variance authority in cities, and no one had questioned that, and the courts had upheld it, in fact. And the Supreme Court now has decided that the statute did not support that practice despite 20 years of precedence. So we really do feel it is important for the language to be the same in both bills in those sections and for it to include the public health, safety, and welfare, or the public interest, one of those types of phrases. And in fact, the language that seems to make the most sense is the last version that I read to you that actually creates a nexus, a connection, that says if you want to have conditions on a variance, it must be specifically related to the impacts that that variance would have on the same public health, safety, and welfare issues that are underlying the ordinance they're asking for a variance from. That's all that we're trying to do, and it's why we really are not able to support this amendment and would respectfully ask that you oppose it. Mr. Chair, with that, I'm happy to answer any questions I'm able to.
Okay, thank you. Do any of the members have questions for Mr. Johnson? Does Tom Watson wish to testify on the amendment or just on the bill?
Speak to the bill.
Okay, thank you. We'll call on you then.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Representative Winkler.
While we're on the topic raised by the League of Cities and the Townships, I wonder if there's anybody in the audience who would testify in support of the amendment based on their discussions. I don't know what Mr. Johnson is going to testify about, but I wonder if we're going to have somebody here who can talk for the amendment in the audience.
Is there anybody from the chamber or another organization that would wish to speak? Okay. Sir, please state your name and who you're with. And
Thank you, Chair, Mr. Chair. My name is Thaddeus Lightfoot. I am a lawyer with the Environmental Law Group in Minneapolis and am speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Chamber in support of the amendment. There are a couple of interesting, the most important issue with respect to the amendment is the amendment specifically addresses Krumenacker. There's been a lot of discussion about what is in the Krumenacker case and what isn't in the Krumenacker case. Very simply, what Krumenacker said was, it said that because there were different standards between in the statute with respect to cities and counties regarding issuance of a variance, and because the city statute required undue hardship, whereas the county statute required practical difficulties, which was a more flexible standard. Ultimately, the Supreme Court in Krumenacker decided that the city of Minnetonka did not meet the undue hardship standard, which is in the city's, which is in the statute right now. Now, what's important is the Supreme Court didn't say that the legislature had to act. The Supreme Court didn't say what standard the legislature should authorize. The Supreme Court did not say that the city statute and the county statute should be absolutely the same in all respects. All it said was that the undue hardship standard applies by definition in the city statute, and the county statute had a practical difficulty standard which was more flexible. And specifically, Krumenacker said that unless the legislature takes action to place the more flexible standard for municipalities into the city statute, they were constrained to hold that the undue hardship standard applied. All the amendment is designed to do is specifically address the issue that is raised in Krumenacker. What the cities want in House File 52 is authority to deny a variance that otherwise satisfies the prerequisites that are set forth in the statute if a property owner agrees that further conditions potentially unrelated to impacts to adjacent property are a prerequisite for that variance. That's not what Krumenacker says. The Krumenacker holding is very limited, and what the Beard Amendment is designed to do is address the issue in Krumenacker without opening the question of whether there should be absolute conformity with respect to the two statutes in every respect. So to suggest that somehow the Beard Amendment creates different standards or two different standards in the statute is simply incorrect. The Beard Amendment clarifies that the variance standard will be the same under both the city statute and the county statute. It addresses Krumenacker but doesn't go further. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that that anyone might have, that any committee member might have, with respect to the rationale for the Beard Amendment.
Are there any questions from the members? Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry.
Lightfoot.
Mr. Whitefoot. White or
Lightfoot with
Lightfoot.
An L.
Okay. Mr. Whitefoot, the Minnesota Supreme Court has changed in its approach to state statutes over the years, and especially the current Chief Justice is very focused on plain language interpretations of statutes. The Krumenacker case is a good example of that. One of the things that we should do as a legislature is avoid future litigation, if possible. We should provide clarity in the law. And it seems to me that, I don't know what the difference is between public interest and health, safety, and welfare, but I know that there is a difference. So how do we not just invite subsequent litigation by putting these two different standards in law?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, the two different, there aren't two different, the Beard Amendment would create the same standard for variances. The only question is that in the county statute, there is a reference to public health, or public health, safety, and welfare of public interest. In the city statute, it is not. That was not addressed in Krumenacker. It was not an issue in Krumenacker, and in fact has never in the 20-plus years since the statute was amended been addressed. So the focus of the Beard Amendment is to allow the cities the same flexibility that counties have under their statute and address the Krumenacker case.
But
go ahead,
but Mr. Chair, Mr. Lightfoot. But you have different words. You have, I mean, as I understand it, you have public interest is the language in the, would be the language in the city statute, and you have health, safety, and welfare in the county statute. How is the court not to to come to the conclusion that those mean different things?
Mr. Lightfoot?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, again, the focus of the, and back to the legislative history with respect to the Beard Amendment is that it is limited to Krumenacker. This legislature does not need to take on the policy discussion to address Krumenacker, which is why we're here, to address the policy discussion of public interest as opposed to health, safety, and welfare. And the legislative history will be clear, and litigants can argue all manner of things, but it is clear that this amendment, as envisioned, the Beard Amendment, is limited to addressing the variance standard and to giving counties, giving cities the same flexibility counties have with respect to removing the undue hardship standard.
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Lightfoot, but then what would be wrong with using the same words? Why wouldn't, what's wrong with using public health, safety, or the, or, and welfare? Why, you know, the, we have a bill that was supposed to be a consensus piece of legislation. We have a bill that's very much not a consensus piece of legislation now. There are now three different groups who, at least, who have very different views. You know, so we're not even addressed. We haven't even begun to address any of the environmental concerns that I assume we're going to hear of soon. What's wrong with using that language? Wouldn't that at least get you the cities and townships back on board? And couldn't that help get your, I mean, you know, sometimes you just count the votes and that's all that counts, but sometimes those bills don't become law.
Mr. Lightfoot.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, the short answer to the question is this legislature doesn't need to do that to address Krumenacker. And there are a lot of additional policy issues that are raised with respect to the use of the, of that particular language in one statute and not another. My understanding of the bill was that it was designed to address Krumenacker, and it was designed to ensure that the undue hardship standard was removed in the city statute. That's exactly what the Beard Amendment does.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Lightfoot, but I still don't understand what would be wrong with doing it. I mean, the problem is we have a court that has a different way of interpreting statutes than Minnesota courts have historically, or it's evolved that way. So it's not hard to predict future problems with this. It's not hard to predict future litigation over what these words mean. It's not hard to predict that another court case puts us right back in here where we were before based on the concerns from the townships and the cities about the language being different. So what I don't understand is why wouldn't we do this?
Mr. Lightfoot.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, you certainly could. You don't need to. And there's no reason at this point, at least from the Minnesota Chamber's perspective, for the legislature to reach out and attempt to grapple with these a public policy issue that is unnecessary to address the Krumenacker decision.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Lightfoot, my only comment would be it may not be necessary, but for purposes of the votes on this committee, but I suspect before you're done, it'll be necessary before this becomes law.
Mr. Lightfoot, any additional comment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, I left my crystal ball at my office this morning, so I don't know that I will comment on that, but I do appreciate the comment. Thank you.
Any additional questions from the members for Mr. Lightfoot? Okay, seeing none. Mr. Johnson, do you wish to readdress the committee? Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, just very briefly, Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. this amendment does not leave the language the same in both sections. It has the public interest in Chapter 394 and no reciprocal language in Chapter 462. One of the proposals we made was to simply repeat the public interest in 462. So it was the same language that is in current law for counties. That's not new language. It already says in law for counties the public interest. Just take that same three words and put it in 462 so it's clear that the language is the same in both and there's no unnecessary confusion for the courts there. The testifier was exactly right. There has not been litigation in this area. It's been understood that the authority is essentially the same. We want to avoid that. That's all we're asking to do. We are, from the start of drafting this language, the reason you see Chapter 394 in here, which was not a part of the required changes of Krumenacher. Krumenacher did not change county variance authority. It changed city variance authority. 394 is in here because to avoid future litigation, we wanted to get the language the same in both sections. That is part of the core reason you have a bill in front of you, is to clean this up and recognize that the courts will continue to find problems if we don't fix the obvious differences, when almost everyone I know has said that they assume that the authority between cities and counties should be the same for when a variance can be granted. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Johnson? Seeing none, Representative, is there anybody else in the audience that wishes to speak? Okay. Sir, would you please state your name and who you're with? And
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Peter Coyle. I'm a lawyer with Larkin Hoffman. I represent the Statewide Builders Association of Minnesota, as well as the Twin Cities Builders Association of Minnesota. Just a couple of points. First of all, I want to dispel the suggestion that was made earlier by my good friend, Mr. Johnson, that there haven't been ongoing discussions about the language of this bill. There have been, maybe not every day, but certainly every other day, and maybe even every day. I'm surprised he forgot about the meeting that we had with he and one of his colleagues just last week on this very language. So I just want to assure you there have been discussions. There will continue to be discussions, I suspect, between now and the floor, if this bill is fortunate enough to go to the floor, and probably even beyond that. Point two, as to the discrepancies between city language and the county language if the Beard Amendment is adopted, I can just tell you there are multiple discrepancies between the zoning authority in the city statute and the zoning authority in the county statute. In fact, there are discrepancies between the variance language that is proposed for zoning in the city statute as well as subdivision variances in the city statute. So this bill doesn't even attempt to address that. So the notion there are discrepancies, I think, is a red herring. But frankly, if it kicks off a discussion amongst all of us about how to better consolidate those two statutes, that would be a terrific thing, but we're not going to do that today. Last point, I represent many builder clients around the state of Minnesota. This bill is critical to them. The delay that has occurred because we respectfully disagree about the language underscores the reason to lay that extraneous language aside so we can deal with the Krumenacher issue head on, get that bill done, and hopefully get businesses and cities and counties back in the business of allowing good projects to move forward. Thank you very much for your time, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Coyle, but why not use the same language here? If there are other discrepancies that can be addressed and should be addressed, because I assume it's in everybody's interest to have less confusion and less litigation and the potential of having another Krumenacher situation come up, but why not start with this one?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, it's a fair question. I can just tell you that respectfully, professionals who have looked at this language disagree about what the words mean. And so rather than continue to be mired in that discussion about what the words mean and recognizing that there are many anomalies within the statutes, as I've noted, we'd like to see the bill move through as clean a fashion as it can, addressing Krumenacher squarely. And if there's a desire to have an ongoing discussion about trying to have the county and city statutes reconcile over time, I'll be the first to sign up for the committee that gets to work on that long-term project.
Representative Winkler, follow-up?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Mr. Coyle, but I feel like the legislative committee is the place to have the discussion about what these words mean. And I understand that, it's a technical discussion, and there's going to be, shades of difference and presumptions that about what might happen, and it's going to color how people come down on this. But we're being asked to vote on an amendment and a bill without really understanding what the trade-offs are. It's not really where I like to be.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Winkler, and respectfully, I realize this is a legislative decision. All I can do is offer my comments. It's apparent that there's disagreement about what the words mean. My view on behalf of my client, the Builders Association, is that that discussion about extraneous verbiage that doesn't currently exist in the statute doesn't need to be addressed today. We should deal only with Krumenacher, and that ongoing discussion can occur at a different point in time. And I appreciate that you've got to make the ultimate policy choice. I respect that. I can only give you my 2 cents worth, which is what I've done.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I request a roll call on the Beard Amendment.
Okay. Representative Hornstein, you've had a question?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know if we're going to be discussed, if we're done with testimony and just discussing the amendment. I just wanted to weigh in on that rather than ask any additional questions of the author or testifier. So I'm not sure where we're at here. We're just going to debate the amendment now, or you want to do something else?
First of all, are there any other testifiers on the amendment in the audience? Seeing none, why don't we go ahead to further discussion amongst the members? Go ahead, Representative.
Okay, Wilson. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that Representative Winkler's point is very well taken. I mean, I just think this issue is just too important to be a work in progress. We had a lot of the stakeholders came together. House File 52 was created. There were some concerns. It would appear to be a good faith effort was made to try to resolve these concerns. I'm not going to weigh in on who talked to who and when, but at the end of when Representative Beard, and I always appreciate your work and your thoughtfulness, at the end of your presentation, you said, well, you know, maybe these outstanding topics are for another bill, or this could be taken up later in the process for this bill or in the Senate. But this is the committee to address this, and so I think this amendment should be voted down, and we have plenty of time. There's a much later deadline for policy bills this year than we've had in the past, and I'd like to get it right in this committee, so I think just the process would demand us to vote this down and see if the parties who did work very hard on this in the interim can get together, because this is really critical for cities and townships, and if they're not on board with this, I think we've got a big problem. So I would just urge us to vote no on the A1 amendment and understand that there is plenty of time to get this right, and this is the committee where we should get it right.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Any additional discussion from the members? Seeing none, Representative Pepin, you wanted to respond and discuss the amendment?
I did, Mr. Chair and members. This has been an issue that has been more challenging than I thought, and the reason I got involved initially was just to address the Krumenacher case, and my intent was to I felt that the parties that were involved were pretty clear with where they wanted to go. This has turned into something that I didn't expect, but my real reason for getting involved was because, like probably many of you, I have gotten calls from my cities and my planning commission saying we need to have the ability to grant variances. But my intent was not to open up a new can of worms, and that's why I support the Beard Amendment, because I feel like that leaves the language very, very narrowly, and I feel like if there's a need to go further than that, that might be a discussion for a different day. Right now I feel, though, that the language as it was at hand worked for many, many, many years, 20, 30 years, before this court case. And I think it was laid out fairly clearly what exactly was addressed in the court case, and I don't think this language was addressed before. The language about the public health, safety, or environment wasn't in there. The only words that were different is the public interest in the county, not in the city. And I don't feel that this bill should address that issue. That's a far bigger issue. I think it goes beyond the intent of where we want to be. If that issue needs to be addressed at a later date, that would be great. But there are so many constituencies of ours that just want the original language fixed to address what the Supreme Court said, that I feel it would be wrong of us to hold this up just to get these little word fixes. And I understand that the language is important to the different groups, but the intent at the end of the day is to just fix the concerns of the Kremenacker case. And I feel like this opens up a whole new can of worms that are best addressed at a different time. So I would encourage members to vote for the Beard Amendment.
Okay, we have a couple other member questions. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The urgency has come up. Why urgency? Urgency is jobs. We have people in my district and other districts and the trades that have projects being held up because of a need for clarification. I agree with the author that we have an issue that's out there, but it's been out there for decades. We've got people that are out of work, and my urgency for passing this amendment and this bill is jobs.
Okay, thank you, Representative Plum. Okay, Representative Winkler, you had a question?
Mr. Chair, I just want to, I guess, clarify my view of this, which is we have plenty of time in this legislative session to get this done, and we don't have to address all of the inconsistencies between all of the statutes to do this. But if you are talking about fixing the Kremenacker situation, and you have opposition from the cities and townships that the Kremenacker case directly affected, it seems to me you're moving forward without really having done the necessary work to find consensus and get the bill in its proper shape before moving forward. I am not in the least opposed to fixing this and getting people back to work, but the problem is that we're just going to find ourselves right back in the same situation again unless we do it carefully and do it right and actually get common agreement on it. So I asked for a roll call. I do think we should defeat the Beard Amendment, and I frankly think the bill should be laid over again and not leave this committee until there is a consensus on what the bill says and does, because this is the correct place to do it. There's no other committee in the House that is responsible for state or local government operations. So I think it should stay here. I think we should defeat the Beard Amendment. And we should give the, you know, it's a way of telling the parties that until they come to this committee with an agreement, we are not interested in moving forward, because it does have a tremendous effect. And I'm only talking this long because Representative Beard asked me to.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. Representative O'Driscoll.
And I'll pick up where Representative Winkler left off.
Period.
Okay. I actually did Mr. Chair, want to raise an item, and it goes to Representative Winkler's point and also Representative Plum's point. Having spent 10 years in municipal government myself as an elected official, I can tell you that this time of the year in the cycle for construction and building is extremely important, because we're coming to the end of the winter season and these contractors will want to get their projects going. And the bureaucracy that we've put in place at the local levels to be able to get this done is you submit a plan, it goes before the various boards, there may be questions, you may have to go back, collect additional information, come back, and it works its way through a city council for approval. The challenge that you have is that could be anywhere from 60 to 90 to 120 days. If we are sincere about trying to untie the hands of cities at this point and move forward on something of this nature, where some variances may be needed and you would have to discover variances and so forth, now is the time to make that that change and not wait for another year to do that and to continue to tie our hands of those who are creating jobs or those who want to make investments within the various communities across the state of Minnesota. And so I think we would want to take that into consideration. And I dispute none of what you said, Representative Winkler, to the extent that this is the committee that needs to be done, that we may want to look at those things. But maybe this is a two-step process, one to fix the litigation that occurred that the Supreme Court ruled on, and the second is to immediately come on the heels of this and try to codify language.
Okay. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm ready to go for another 2 hours on this. No, seriously, members, the language in the A1 amendment, I think all sides agree that there's nothing in the language of the A1 amendment that they disagree with. I think the sides are probably differing over one side would like more language in the A1 amendment. I would propose that is a worthy discussion that we need to have, but it goes a lot further than the original intent of House File 52, so I would urge I vote for the A1 amendment.
Representative Pepin, any final comments on the A1 amendment?
Nope.
Seeing none, Representative Winkler has requested a roll call vote. There will be a roll call. Any final discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Pepin.
Aye.
Representative Murray.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Representative Beard.
Aye.
Representative Green.
Nay.
Representative Hancock.
Aye.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative McFarland.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Quam.
Yes.
Representative Sanders.
Aye.
Representative Scalzi.
No.
Representative Simon.
No.
Representative Erdahl.
Yes.
Representative Winkler.
No.
Okay, there being 10 ayes and 5 nays, the motion does prevail and the amendment is adopted. Representative Pepin, would you like to move forward with your bill?
I would, but I don't think much more needs to be said. Maybe we could, this time we could just take witnesses overall on the bill.
Okay, any... Okay, Mr. Watson, you wanted to speak regarding the bill? Please state your name and who you're with and proceed.
For the record, my name is Tom Watson. Who I'm with is, can I be an individual?
You sure can, sir.
Thank you. I happen to live in the city of North Oaks, and I spent 18 years in public office, including 4 terms as mayor, and have dealt intimately with the land use issues. I've spent the last 10 years working with county governments on land use issues, and it's entirely possible, given the work I've done in the rural parts of counties in Minnesota involving townships, of course you recognize there's probably only one legislator here that's actually got a township that does do its own zoning, namely White Bear Township. I probably am one of the few people here that can talk to you about the proposal in House 52 as originally drafted. I would want you to take a very, very serious look at simply moving practical difficulties as it's been interpreted in county government to municipal government. You will create a situation where if any of you have done your research, and according to the staff that I've talked to and 2-3 legislators I've talked to, you haven't seen a nickel's worth of information to indicate what the counties have been doing since 2008 applying practical difficulties to variance decisions as compared to prior to 2008. And you haven't looked at that from the standpoint of how that same application would apply to variance decisions in municipal government. If you have, I'd like to see it. I've asked for that for a month. I've tried to work with the League of Minnesota Cities. I'm glad to now see Mr. Johnson. I hadn't had an opportunity to get a return call. The fact of the matter is, if you pass this bill applying practical difficulties the way you've done it, you are going to prevent municipal governments from denying variances. County government today is practically unable to deny a variance. The questions that were raised in the case, as they're being interpreted today, there's 6 questions. The last question says, in fairness and justice, what's the reasonable thing to do? And county governments are absolutely blank check approving variances. I am prepared to give you information about exact applications, illustrations, and points of real variances been approved affecting riparian lots, non-riparian lots in unorganized parts of the state of Minnesota in our counties. Remember, counties are doing planning and zoning for townships in all of greater Minnesota. Richest resource we have in this state is both our surface and groundwater. I was a mayor of a community where we spent the last 30 years battling contaminated groundwater. I can tell you, if you do this wrong, you will live the consequences beyond your life and mine. 2 last comments I would say. I am prepared to work with this committee and anybody on it in producing the kind of research that would show you exactly what you're asking to do and what barn door you're going to open and let the horses run free, if you're going to move practical difficulties the way this bill is written, to move it to city government as a new standard. That is absolutely unconscionable that you would do that. Second of all, I have offered to work with members of parties, committees, groups, lobby groups, or otherwise, on making this bill right. There's a right thing to do. There needs to be one standard for counties and townships and cities. There's no doubt about that. This does not get us there. This absolutely will cause us to be back here when you're going to have some of your cities, and Mr. Johnson probably should do his research, and then he'll know that. They'll be coming back here asking you to close the door on the blank checks and approving variances that will go on. I'm happy to work with groups like that. I'm currently working with some lake associations in Minnesota. I can go pretty much wherever I need to go. There's a right way to do this bill. I'm volunteering to do it, but moving practical difficulties as it is right now is not the right thing to do. That needs to be tightened.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Watson. Representative Simon has a question.
Thank you. Actually, Mr. Chair, it's a question of you. I'm wondering whether we could hear from someone from the League of Cities to respond to that, the notion of putting practical difficulties in the city portion.
Okay. Mr. Johnson and Mr. Sulem, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. Technical, detailed, legal reasons of why practical difficulties are in there, I can't go too far into because I'm not an attorney. I only occasionally play one on TV. But I can tell you that the Krumenacher decision was over the undue hardship section of city authority. As we discussed this over the interim with attorneys from cities, from builders, developers, everyone involved, counties, we reached that the term practical difficulties seemed to be the right one to use just to have uniformity in what term was being used, and then we put the identical definition of that term in both places. So the previous testifier's concerns are over what that definition of practical difficulties could bring to bear. I can tell you, yes, we have heard from cities and from citizens and from a number of organizations and have seen letters to the editor and blogs and op-ed pieces saying that this bill, House File 52, is the city's giving away the variance authority to land use developers, that we are selling out to big business. And then we have business and developers telling us that this bill is taking away all of their rights to get variances. So somewhere in the middle, we're sitting as cities. Just remind the committee, we brought this bill forward. Cities are very well aware that we need to have variance authority, but we need to have it in a way that's clear and legally defined so we're not going to be legally challenged when we try and exercise it. That was the purpose of this language.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Sulem, did you wish to respond also?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Again, I'm Ken Sulem with the Minnesota Association of Townships, and I just want to touch on a couple of points. One, there are several hundred townships in the rural area doing their own zoning. So it is not strictly a county issue. There are multiple hundreds of townships doing their own zoning. The issue is that we need, as I brought up earlier, we need to be consistent with or more restrictive than the county standards. And now, because of this difference that we have over the clarity of can we do conditions or not, the reality is we may be forced to advise our members if this bill even becomes law. Now that is controversial, there may be a lot of doubt as to whether it can be signed, and that would be counterproductive for both sides. But we may be forced to advise our folks, look, because of the ambiguity and the risk of being sued, we're going to say if you're concerned and say this variance would make sense, but only if conditions are attached, and the condition authority is now very ambiguous, deny the variance. The key word in the statute is we may grant. It is not we shall grant. It is not we must grant. It is we may grant. And if we feel that we cannot grant a variance without safeguards, we'll be advising our folks that they need to deny. Again, I think counterproductive to the intent of those trying to work with us. And just for the record, because of some earlier comments, I want to make it clear, because I alluded to in my comments, for the most part, we have had very good relations and discussions with the opponents of our efforts. It's just been a handful not even a handful, a very limited number where we've had one person told me specifically The reason they won't articulate their objections is we don't have to. So I want to make clear, for the most part, it has been very good negotiations.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Sillum. Representative Simon, did you have any follow-up? Or okay, thank you. Representative Beard.
Well, Mr. Sillum just addressed my question, or Mr. Chairman, and I just wanted to point out that it does say in both the county and the city portion, which was language that there was harmony on, is that it's they may grant a variance, and if they choose to, they can take this into account. It's not that they shall grant variances. So I think it's permissive language, and I just want to point that out to the committee. Okay. Thank you.
Representative Hancock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Unfortunately, I'm not an attorney by trade. There are some people on here that are. It seems to me that I'm getting a lot of email and concern concerning this issue, it takes various ramifications. The real concern from my constituents is, does this bill open the floodgates to potential pollution and potential contamination of waters? And I think what we're really addressing is, to a certain extent, how much we trust our local authorities then with that capability. I tend to think that people in the local areas tend to make the best judgment as to what applies in their area. And I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, this is really not a question. I'm just I will get to that, and maybe how the particular bill affects these concerns. I guess that would be the question. I'm just trying to relay the concerns. And my concern would be, how do we have some consistency in local authority, which I approve of, and does this bill, my understanding is this bill does attempt to do that. It gives the cities then the option of creating a variance, which they need to govern properly. But does it do anything that isn't already a potential in terms of the variances granted by the counties and the townships that are already there? Do we not have to trust all these agencies to grant variances in accordance with the public interest or in the health and well-being? Or I don't see anything in granting variances that could not be not also compliant with pollution laws and those things, but maybe some clarity from the attorneys in this and how it all relates to I don't want to do something, I live on a lake myself, but I don't want to do something that's going to potentially open floodgates for damage to our water system, but I also want to be able to trust my local governments in submitting variances. So I guess I'm just expressing my lack of understanding here, and I don't want to vote on something that I really don't understand what the ramifications are. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I believe Mr. Johnson would like to address the committee again. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. I think I can partly answer your question, Representative. You're absolutely right. It is up to the local units of government to decide how they have to implement their ordinances that protect public health, safety, and welfare. That's what the ordinances are there for. It's actually why we made the argument we did on the amendment, that the language should be clear in both sections of law, that is, in fact, what we should be looking at as we look at conditions in a variance. So I agree with your concerns, and I do think it is something that's appropriate, but with the language different, so that the public interest currently, as the bill is now amended, is only in the county statute, and that same language does not repeat in the city variance authorities, it raises doubts about whether cities do have that authority. So it's similar to the comments Mr. Sulem made earlier. We really do feel that as part of this legislation, we should be making that a consistent thing. We'll have to deal with that at another time.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hancock, a follow-up.
Just one question in that regard, then. From the conversation, it seemed to me, and thank you, Mr. Chair, I'm not used to that comment there. it would seem to me that we've heard before that what we're maybe inferring here or implying is that county restrictions are tougher than what we might give to the cities. And we've had testimony that perhaps the county ordinances now are basically granted on a free will basis. To me, that's part of responsibility of local governments. But we can't give local governments authority to do something and then expect them not be able to exercise that without fear of constant litigation.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not going to try and speak to the breadth of county authority to grant variances. I don't believe there's been a significant difference in what authority we have to grant variances. There have been different court cases that have ruled differently on what required conditions can trigger a variance. And it's actually, as the previous testifier, Mr. Johnson, listed, there's a list now of six for counties that they get to go through, six conditions, which is different than cities because they had different language than we have. So we do want to try and make the language so that we're not constantly hanging with a threat of litigation for having made a decision. It's why we're asking for the clarity.
Okay. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Mr. Johnson and Mr. Sulem, possibly. I know this is on the fly. You opposed the Beard Amendment. Now that the Beard Amendment is on, do you oppose the bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative, and with all due respect to our author who has worked very hard on this bill with us, yes, in the condition the bill is right now, the League of Cities would have to oppose this legislation.
Okay. Mr. Sulem?
Mr. Chair, members, again, Ken Sulem with the Township Association. I have to double-check with my folks because it does put us in this very awkward box of how does it work. But my feeling is that, yes, we will be opposing the legislation in its current form.
Okay. Additional questions. Representative Winkler.
Final comment, Mr. Chair. Mr. Representative O'Driscoll, there's no question issue of timing. This bill could be passed off the floor on Monday. And moved out of this committee today in a form that was with common agreement of all parties if everyone were committed to consensus. If they're not committed to consensus and they just want to push it through because they have the votes, they can do that. But the point is, I you know, we're really in a situation where it's very possible and certainly preferable that everybody could be in agreement on this bill. But apparently there is a group or a set of parties who are more interested in getting what they want done quickly rather than doing it with consensus. And if they chose to, the bill could be done on Monday.
Representative Pepin.
Thanks. I just want to make a general comment. You know, I don't think it's particularly helpful to accuse one side of doing this or the other side of doing that. I think I just want everybody to keep in mind the language beforehand on public interest was public interest was in on the county side and not on the city side. We are not changing anything by doing this. And if that issue needs to be addressed, that's fine. But this bill didn't intend to go in and change the inconsistencies in counties and cities. I have been working with the cities and the other interested parties, and I'm disappointed that absent this language, the cities and the townships can't support this bill, because I do think that it's in everyone's best interest to support this bill. And I think the best way to do that is to limit it to just the issues that were described in the court case and not go off into tangents, because I think once we open it up into that, there's going to be all sorts of different issues that we could look at, and I'm not interested at this time in fixing all of those things, just what is meant to do so that the people can get their variances and, you know, get building.
Okay. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I've kind of followed this, and like you, Mr. O'Driscoll, I've spent many years on local government and have worked quite well with the League of Minnesota Cities through all those years, and they're not a group that we take. I mean, we really respect the League of Minnesota Cities, which is why all of the cities belong to the League of Minnesota Cities, and they've done wonderful work for the state of Minnesota in many ways, and model ordinances helping cities. You you would understand that as I do. And as we saw this first bill, and I was a co-author, and I appreciate the you asking me to be a co-author, and I believe that the bill originally was pulled so quickly because of the possible objections of the auto dealers. Now, I've got six auto dealers in my district. I haven't heard from one of them, but it was pulled so quickly, and so now I'm constantly getting emails from people saying, what happened to House File 52? And I have to tell them, well, the auto dealers wanted to look at it a little bit more, but we'll see it again. But I didn't think we'd see it in this form, and I'm just wondering why the rush to push this through when policy bills, as I understand it, have until April 7th. And I think this is such an important committee. The work we do here is very crucial. And to have the League of Minnesota Cities be one of the groups that say, I really oppose it, the form that it is in now, to me, that requires that we pull the bill again. It was pulled for the auto dealers. Why can't it be pulled for the League of Minnesota Cities and work on it and come back in a better form for April 7th? I don't get that part of it.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Representative Skelz, and you make a good point. And this was, I think, the first or second week of January, and that was over a month ago. And there's been no movement, and I don't suspect that holding this off is going to get movement to have everybody on board to where I think they were probably more on board in December from their from what I'm hearing from my conversations. I don't believe it's just the auto dealers. In fact, that's not who Peter Coyle was testifying in behalf of. The builders have issues. Others have issues. There are some concerns. I think there are legitimate concerns about what those words mean, public interest, and what public health, safety of the environment means. Does that grant them more authority? Some people think it grants cities more authority. Some people think it grants less authority. And, you know, I don't object to those conversations. I just don't think that this is where we do it, since it's obviously very controversial, and I feel like this is kind of a case of biting off your nose to spite your face. You know, everybody wants this language fixed, but we're going beyond where the language was meant to go, and you know, I think we get the basic language fixed and then see what happens after that, because I don't think it's to anyone's benefit that, as Representative O'Driscoll talked about, this is the building season. This is, we need to make movement on this. We've waited for 5 weeks. There's not any movement. I don't think that we're going to get any movement. You know, if someone else wants to take up another bill to address that issue, that's fine, and that's their opportunity to do it. But, you know, I really think that at this time we should just leave the language as it was, as it's been for the last, I don't know, 20, 30 years, with the public interest in the county section and not in the city section. And, you know, and I know, I think it's frustrating to all people involved, and I didn't mean to get you signed onto a bill that you can't support in the end, nor did I mean to get the cities, you know, work with them and then get a situation where they can't support it. I hope that there will be some more discussions, and there still is time before it gets to the floor. And, but for today, I would like to see this pass so that we can continue the process, because I think we could just beat our heads against the wall all day. We could have heard this again next week. I've been putting this off week after week after week, and nothing has happened. So at the end of the day, at some point, you just have to say, I'm just going to stick to where it was and go from there.
Okay, is there any further discussion on the bill as amended? Representative Simon.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that we lay the bill on the table to facilitate negotiations. That would be my motion. I think it's important that we at least take a vote on that. So I'd like to ask for a roll call on that motion.
Okay, Representative Simon has requested a roll call vote that we lay the bill on the table. There will be a roll call vote. Any? Is that open for discussion? No, okay. The clerk will.
I have a.
Representative Winkler.
I have a parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
So I'm not debating the motion. And that is, was the motion to send this bill, the original motion, to send it to the General Register?
That is correct. Okay, we will proceed with the motion to lay the bill over. To table the bill, excuse me. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Pepin.
No.
Representative Murray.
No.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Beard.
Nay.
Representative Green.
Yes.
Representative Hancock.
No.
Representative Hornstein.
Yes.
Representative McFarland.
No.
Representative O'Driscoll.
No.
Representative Quam.
Yes.
Representative Sanders.
No.
Representative Scalzi.
Yes.
Representative Simon.
Yes.
Representative Erdahl.
No.
Representative Winkler.
Yes.
There being six ayes and nine nays, the motion does not prevail. Okay. Okay. Is there any further discussion on the bill as amended? Seeing none, we'll proceed with the vote. Those in favor of the, Representative Pepin renews her motion that House File 52 be recommended to pass as amended and placed on the general register. Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say nay.
Nay.
No. No.
The motion does prevail, and House File 52 is recommended to pass and placed on the general register. Representative Purcell. We'll next be hearing House File 305. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative. Thank you. Representative Sanders, would you like to move the bill?
Mr. Chair, I will move House File 305, recommend that it pass and be moved to the general register.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Sanders. The bill has been moved, and Representative Purcell, would you like to proceed with discussing your bill? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I think everyone should have had the bill summary, and I believe that lays out the reason that we're here today addressing House File 305. The current law basically does not permit the establishment of a bank, a branch bank in a township without legislative approval. And so we're here requesting legislative approval. We have approval from other sources, preliminary from Department of Commerce, which is required under state statute, and the township, Northern Township in my district, has given their preliminary approval, and they will pass a resolution in support of this branch bank. And I have with me today Mr. Bruce Mead, who is the operator of the proposed bank.
Take Welcome to the committee. Would you like to speak to the bill, Mr. Mead?
Thank you. My name
Please
is
state your name. Thank you.
My name is Bruce Mead. I'm Senior Vice President of Altima Bank, Minnesota. Our bank is located in Winger, Minnesota, with facilities in Boston, and I operate a loan production office in Northern Township, immediately across the street from the city of Bemidji. If I were across the street, we would not need this legislation, but it is an anomaly of state law. And so we're desiring to expand my operation into a full branch within the township, but we do need to obtain legislation approving that before we can actually apply to the Department of Commerce for approval of the branch.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the members for either of the testifiers, Representative Purcell or Mr. Mead? Any discussion? Any other testimony from anybody in the audience? Seeing none, Mr. Representative.
Oh!
Yeah. Keep looking.
Is it Bemidji Day?
Put your hand down.
Did we have some? Representative Hancock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I perhaps live closer to the bank than Mr. Purcell does, and everything here is kosher, and I would strongly support that.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Sanders, would you like to renew the motion?
Yep, I'll renew my motion. The House File 305 be recommended pass and be moved on to the General Register.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail, and House File 305 is passed and moved on to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
Thank you. All right. Thank you for your time today. Meeting is adjourned.